April 25th meeting.
So moved.
Okay, Lynn, is there a second to that?
I'll second it.
Ben, seconded. Any discussion on the minutes from April 25th? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Hi, Richard. I would like to thank the public for coming today. We have a large group of people, a large representation. There is a public sign-in sheet. If you want to sign in with your name and phone number, please put that on there. Are there comments from the public? To start. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Catalina Morales. I'm an organizer with IDEA and I work with the Latino community in Wilmer. And I'm just here, I have some information about separation ordinances. I have been kind of like an example in some other places to use on the city and county level. And also some points about some of like the dangers that some of the kind of policies have on the immigrant community if you know, they pass.
Thank you. Any other? Yes.
Will there be time to comment after the questions that you that we submitted that you answered? Because that's when I thought about it.
Yes. Okay. What the format will be tonight is the questions that commission members have sent in and from some of the public have been sent to both Chief Felt and Sheriff Hartog. They will talk and address those questions. And then if there are more questions that have come up from the commission members or the public, we will address that. We do have a one-hour time frame on this meeting, and so that's why we want to start on time and end on time. Yes.
I was just going to, if your questions don't get asked, would you just write them down and maybe get them to Shelley or somebody on the committee so that we could forward them on to the chief and the sheriff so that they can be addressed at a later time? Thank you.
Any other public comments? Okay, thank you. Well, then we will turn the program over to Chief Felt and Sheriff Hartog. As I said, they have been given all the questions that were submitted to us and are going to talk about their department's perspectives on those questions. So I'm turning it over to you two.
All right. Well, thank you for having us here tonight. I guess I'll start out. My name is Jim Felt. I'm the chief of police. I've been the chief for just shy of 3 years here in Wilmer. But I worked for the Wilmer Police Department for, in one capacity or another, for the last 30 years. 27 as a full-time police officer. So, you know, some of the questions that were sent to us tonight, some overlapped. Some people sent similar questions in, so some of them we'll give some general answers to. We'll answer as many as we can. We realize that there's a lot of anxiety in the public now with changes in, you know, the presidency and in different administration, in perceptions of how the police are handling immigration issues, undocumented people, that type of thing. And we hope to give you what's happening in Wilmer, Minnesota, to maybe straighten out some rumors that may be going around and let you know how we're handling things here. So I'll just start off that quick and I'll let Sheriff Hartog introduce himself.
Hello, I'm Dan Hartog, Sheriff of Candiota County. This is my 15th year as sheriff. I've worked for Candiota County since 1982, so it's been over 35 years, and I have over 36 years experience in law enforcement total. I know I don't look as young as Jim, but I am. but this has been a great community to work in, and just kind of go through what we do as a sheriff's office overall. And we have the dispatch center, the jail, so we have a lot more functions within the sheriff's office and duties that way, and we deal with different things on different levels than the police department does that way. So I'll kind of try to touch on all those different areas, and if you guys have questions, guys and girls have questions, I'll definitely answer those. So thank you.
Kind of the main differences between our department is the geography in which we work. We're Sheriff's Department, Police Department, we're all licensed statewide, so our police powers go statewide, but we generally stay in the area where we are, I'm employed by the City of Willmar, so generally it's Willmar City limits, but I am deputized, all of our people are, so we can help out if there would be an emergency in Pennock or Lake Lillian or something like that. The Sheriff's Department has a little bit easier going to other counties to assist if there's a disaster or something there, but every police officer has the same police powers. The Sheriff's Department is in charge of the jail, so anyone that's incarcerated, like Sheriff Hartog said, the dispatch center and a lot of those type of duties where the police department does not have that. So some of these questions deal specifically with people that are incarcerated, and Sheriff Hartog would be the best person to answer that, because when we arrest somebody, we turn them over to the Sheriff's Department for the custody there. So, but should I maybe start a little bit on the questions, or anything else you want to?
No, I think on? I'll just okay. Get into the questions and kind of go over generally what we do. I think we'll answer a lot of those questions. So,
one question that came up on these is, what is our relationship with ICE or Immigration and Customs Enforcement? And really, it's as simple as we have their phone number. We do not have regular meetings with ICE. We don't have any direct line to ICE. We do make contact with them on occasion. Most of the time that we have contact with ICE at the police department anyway is if we arrest somebody for a different offense. We don't arrest anyone. We don't take anyone into custody simply for not having the proper documentation for being in the United States. Most of the time we would arrest someone maybe for a forgery or a crime of some other type, and through the investigation, sometimes that can be another family member reporting that they're in the country illegally, that they may have several different identification sources on them with different names, may come up as a forged identification through other cases, that type of thing. Then if they're arrested for a different crime, we would notify ICE and let them know, hey, this is the person that we have, or these are the names that are being used, providing the information to them. So that's kind of generally how we deal with ICE. So, is that?
Go ahead. I'll just kind of go. It's kind of hard. We overlap yeah. a lot on this stuff, but. We deal with as far as the deputies on the road, and I know this is a concern where some people feel law enforcement is going to be asking your status. As far as just out of the blue stopping somebody, we don't do that. We have to have probable cause to stop a vehicle, and I'll just use that as an example to stop a vehicle. And if it's committing a traffic violation, or if we're looking for some other crime, we have a reason to stop that vehicle, we do. If once we get into the investigation and it's a criminal investigation, that type of thing, and there's some questions in regards that are popping up because of identification, trying to find out who this person is, and if we find out, hey, are you in the country legally or illegally, trying to find out what's going on with the person, we'll get into it a little bit more there. If we're investigating a crime, so that we kind of dig into a little deeper. In regards to the jail, when people are brought into the jail, be it from the police department or if we bring them in, we have a standard booking sheet, and when the people are brought into jail, they're asked many different questions, and one of the questions is if you're a U.S. citizen or not when they're brought into the jail. Because they're brought into the jail, they're being brought in for a crime. And at that point, they say, no, they're not. We then contact ICE and see if they have any type of holds or anything on this person. And if they say, yeah, we want this person because they have some issue with them, at that point, ICE, in the past, and this happened several years ago that we're dealing with this, but they would have they call it their warrant. And that it's not signed by a judge. It's signed by an immigration officer. So, well, we don't hold them past. They want us to hold them 48 hours, but we don't. We tell ICE that the person is supposed to get out on this date. If you're here to get them, you're here to get them. Otherwise, they go out the front door. So that's how we deal with that whole situation in the jails. And I know that's kind of statewide. I think that's how a lot of sheriff's offices deal with those issues. And so, you know, just summary overall, that's how we deal with you know, people out on the street. We don't target people. We don't look for people that, oh, I want to walk up and ask this person their immigration status. We don't do that. So it has to be tied with a crime.
Tying in a little bit on that, one of the questions was if we accept other forms of identification like a passport or you know, identification card from another country or something like that as proof of someone's identity. Generally, yes. It is harder for us to verify if someone comes in with you know, a driver's license from, you know, from even from Canada. I mean, though Canada is probably one of the more common ones that we see because we are close to the Canadian border here. It's still tough for us to identify those people and run them through the system. With a Minnesota driver's license, we can have results back within, you know, 30 seconds or less. Even with a Canadian license, it might be same day. You know, so a lot of times we kind of have to take that at face value. And we don't have a lot of training when it comes to identifying foreign documents as to what could be fraudulent or truthful. So a lot of times we have to take that at face value that it is a legitimate document from that country. And if they have a driver's license from another country, we accept it here the same as if they had a Minnesota license. So
I think one of the questions too was asked if we have anybody that's trained. ICE had some training that was out there for the 287 program, I believe. We don't have anybody trained that way to do those tasks. In dealing with mental health issues, there was a question that talked about that a little bit. We deal a lot with mental health issues inside the jail. Last week, we have holding cells, and those were all full with people that had mental health issues. So our correctional officers do a fantastic job. They have had some training dealing with mental health issues. Unfortunately, a lot of jails deal with mental health now, since our mental health system has a lot of issues within itself. But we deal with those issues. And then as far as training for the guys on the road and gals out on the road, they have had some training dealing with mental health issues. Some of this training comes up and we send them to them. We have two negotiators that have had extensive training. I know the police department does too, but we have two that we call them negotiators and have been through some extensive training dealing with that. There was a question about minority populations and women within the sheriff's office. We do have some minorities on our department. We had a Latino that retired just a couple years ago, but we have an individual that's a Korean background, Vietnam, and we also have a Latino that's working in the jails. And then women, we have 22 females that work in the sheriff's office overall, actually 30, counting our secretarial, 30, and four of our females are actually sergeants. So We're very diverse that way across the board, and they do an outstanding job. So
maybe just a quick clarification: when Sheriff Hartog talked about people with mental illness in the jail, those are people that are facing criminal charges also. But generally, and not totally speak for you, but if they need mental health care more than they need to be locked up in the jail, obviously mental health care trumps that, and they try and get them into mental health care facilities. But that's great difficulty.
Actually, what we do there, we have a program set up. If we have somebody that is having severe mental health issues, we have a team put together. I'm on that team, somebody from Woodland Centers, county attorney, and we will actually try to get the commitment process speeded up if the person is not in on some serious felony charges. Then we have to obviously deal with that situation. But and then we also have Woodland Centers. They have a mobile crisis unit. If somebody's been having some mental health issues, before they go out the door, we'll call the mental health crisis team. They'll come in and they'll actually talk to the person and see if they can give them some other additional resources or help. So,
talking a little bit about the diversity of our department too, we struggle with that. We do not have very many women. We don't have very many minorities that apply with us. We have 6 women that work for our department right now, and they're all in support services with our clerical staff and our community service officers. We have 1 Latino officer. We struggle with that we just don't have a lot of applicants. We have 3 openings right now. We went to job fairs, social media, paper, personal phone calls to other departments, got a hold of the Latino Police Officers Association, Somali Police Officers Association, had them try and reach out. We had 2 minority applicants apply, 1 African-American, 1 Vietnamese, and 2 women apply, and we only had 26 people apply total. So we struggle with that. One thing we're trying to do on our department to try and get more minority and women applicants is we just started a Police Explorer program. It's for young people between 14 and 20. So we're hoping, and over half that group is women, and we have a number of Latino people involved. We've had a couple Somali individuals that have come and gone in there, but our hope there is that we can get them interested in law enforcement and hopefully interested in our department and maybe get them on the force someday. So that we struggle with that, and when we have received, when we have had minority applicants in our department, they're heavily recruited from other departments like St. Paul, where there's, you know, maybe the bigger departments, more pay, a few more opportunities, and the draw of the metro is a big thing right now too. So that's one thing that we constantly battle against here, 2 hours from the metro. Talking about, one of the questions was, how do we communicate with people who do not speak English? For the Willmar Police Department, we use a variety of different ways. We have 4 officers that are bilingual in Spanish on our department. We'll use them as often as possible. A lot of times we will call in an interpreter. We don't have anybody that speaks Somali, so we do have to do it that way. For any other languages, we have 1 officer does sign language, I guess you could say. But otherwise, we use a language line on the telephone for translation, and we do have live translators that are people from Willmar that will come right to the traffic stop or a crime scene or something like that and translate, and that's very common for us. And it's usually Spanish is the largest on that. But we've even had officers, we've got some flip charts, people can point to pictures, you know, in the meantime to just say, you know, an interpreter is coming. We've got some cheat sheets in Somali and Spanish on some basic phrases that officers can use. And then one of our best friends is on our smartphones, does Google Translate, can sometimes get us by for a couple minutes until we can. We never rely on that. We always want a live person there, but sometimes just to let them know that we've got somebody coming that can speak to you. So.
Yeah, the translating part for us. With the jail, we have translators that come in, call them in, and they'll help with the translating there, the booking process, and that whole situation. Same with the deaf. We have a system all put in place there. Dispatch, we have the language line that dispatchers can call and get assistance that way. I've listened to some of the phone calls that dispatchers deal with when, you know, smiling, calling in, and there's something very urgent, and the language is really tough, and they do a great job with that stuff. So we do have access with the language line, and our deputies out on the road, they also have access to interpreters. So as far as I think we're asking, answering a lot of these questions. As far as the cultural sensitivity, I know, was that last year, Jim? We had a Somalian officer come from Columbia Heights.
Columbia Heights.
He came out to Willmar. Jim, his department put that together. And a lot of our officers from both Sheriff's Office and the PD attended that. And I know over the years we've had other trainings throughout dealing with the different cultures within Wilmer and Candua County. One thing about the Sheriff's Office, the Wilmer officers obviously work more with the minority population than we do. Our main areas are out in the county, the smaller communities, that type of thing. And so we don't deal with it on a daily basis quite as much. The jail does, and dispatch. So.
Yep, that's a couple things that we've tried to do very recently is where we had the Latino Police Officers Association come out. They did a public meeting and discussion, and then there was one at the Law Enforcement Center was more law enforcement training related. And then the same with the Smalley police officer from Columbia Heights. He was representing the Smalley Police Officers Association. Same thing there, where public forum and then training for our department. One thing that we really look at on any of our hires, a question that we ask is what experience do you have dealing with people of diverse cultures, different ethnic groups and that type of thing. And we're finding that so many of the people that we are currently hiring and that are coming to our department, looking for jobs, have got some pretty extensive backgrounds, just from the schools that they've gone to. We do have a couple officers on our department that traveled abroad that actually were in some immersion programs when they were in college in Mexico and learning Spanish and that type of thing. So, but we try and grab those classes and experiences when we can, or have our officers that that are from diverse groups talk about their experiences too. Common question here has really been do we approach people off the street and ask them for their documentation, if they're a United States citizen or not. And we talked about that at the very beginning, that we do not. Our officers need to be investigating another crime. They can't just walk up to somebody on the street and ask for their, for documentation proving that they're a United States citizen. In our policy on impartial policing, we've covered that, where it talks about that you need to have a legitimate, crime-related reason to do that. And also in there that you can't focus on anybody, it's good common sense, but we have it written out in our policy too, that you don't approach somebody just based on their sex, the color of their skin, what language they're speaking, that type of thing. You can use it as identifying information. If somebody reports a crime and that it's an Asian male, wearing a green jacket running down the street, we're obviously not going to, grab a Somali male and question him about the same crime. If that's, we use that as identifying information only. But the question here also came up, that what do you do if you suspect that, how do you make a complaint if you feel that you were stopped only on the basis of their race? And anybody can bring that forward to our department. We have specific policies in place for investigation of various complaints. It can be everything from if you feel you were treated rudely at a scene to if you feel that a crime was committed where, officer was involved, and will handle it appropriately. There's an investigation done on all those reports. It can be the level that the person wants, the person reporting it. It can be just simply if they say, just please go talk to this officer and let them know that, maybe what you did offended me, or, that type of thing. We'll certainly honor that request and do that. Or if the person signs gives a statement for a formal complaint, we go through a formal complaint process where there's actually certain steps involved, where the officer is notified, where there's an investigation, where they're a tape recorded statement from them, looking for witnesses, looking for other evidence, and then the person is notified of the outcome of that too, whether there's disciplinary action taken. And there's a whole level of everything from something is unfounded to a note in their file to retraining, all the way up to termination, depending on the type of violation there, or criminal charges if it's bad.
Yep. And across the state, we have the same thing across the state. That's we're post licensed, so across the state, post the licensing authority for us that's a mandated policy that we have to have in place, in investigation of officer misconduct, that type of thing. So, and there's an officer bill of rights, and so there's certain things that have to be done to do the investigation, and then obviously notify everybody of the outcome, what happened to it, and go from there. So, one of the questions I was looking at here, asking if we have an ICE detention contract where ICE pays the jail to hold immigrants in detention during deportation hearings. We do not have an agreement with ICE. I think there's a couple other counties that do, but we don't have anything with them. So, and there's a question, what is our county's relationship to ICE? I mean, they're another law enforcement agency. We work with them when we need to. We don't talk to them on a daily basis by any means, but if there's a situation that we have to work with them on, we work with them on it.
For me, I know most of the contact I have with ICE, and probably the last time I had contact with them was maybe about 4 months ago. A gentleman came into our lobby. He didn't speak English very well, but talking with him, he needed some help notifying ICE that he had a hearing down in the cities and was unable to make it. So I called down there and helped him reschedule that hearing. So, and he walked out of the lobby. So he did the right thing. You know, he knew he wasn't going to make it there in time. And talking with ICE on the phone, they were very, you know, I just had to verify his identity from a card that he had, and he had the name of the person that he was working with, and they were very good about rescheduling that. Other than that, I can't remember the last, it's probably been 2-3 years since I've had contact with them. And that was, they called and said, hey, we're coming to town, we're looking for this particular individual, he's known to be violent, we've only have two agents, could you park down at the end of the street, and in case things go bad, could you come help us out? So we didn't even walk up to the door with them or anything like that. So generally now what I've heard from other officers is ICE really tries to distance the local officers from what they're doing too. They realize that it's as far as going and knocking on the door or making personal contact, they generally will try and be the ones to do that.
I think we've covered all the questions that were asked.
I've got a question. You said you had a specific policy in place to address concerns a person may have about being arrested or being mistreated while arrested. Is that kind of what I'm understanding?
For any perceived officer misconduct.
Okay.
So it could be any variety
how,
of things.
How does one know about that policy, or what's the process of filing a complaint?
Sure. You know, every police department in Minnesota has to have a policy that addresses that and a method for investigating and that type of thing. And, you know, just by coming to the police department, it's the policy is available. It's in the council policy book now.
Yeah.
But, it's not on our website or anything, but any police department, anybody can come in, and any officer can hand over that paperwork. It does not have to be filled out there. There's no questions asked on it, other than if I'm the one that somebody comes to the office and they ask for the investigation paperwork, I just ask them, is there something that I need to address right now that's a safety thing? You know, I give them the opportunity to talk about, but they can turn in the paperwork later too if they prefer. So
what I'm understanding is if somebody wants to file a complaint, they can ask the officer at that location at that time for that policy.
Sure, they could. Yep. What it would probably involve is somebody going to the office and getting the paperwork, but they certainly can, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And under the Bill of Rights with the peace officers, the person has to sign the complaint. It just can't be somebody walks in and says, you know, I want to make a complaint against Jim Felt. He looked at me crossways and then walk out the door. There has to be a specific reason why they want to file the complaint, and then they have to sign it. So it kind of takes away the frivolous stuff that way. So,
and one thing we really want to try and make community members feel comfortable with us, that We haven't changed our policing methods for, you know, over 20 years here, when, especially when it comes to, you know, immigration issues and that type of thing. We're still operating the same as we have before November of last year. We live and work in the community. Our kids go to the same schools as people in this room. And, you know, we're vested in this community as we know other people are too. So we were really, the big thing is we want to try and address the fears that people have, because sometimes the rumors of these, the fear of what's going on is worse than what's actually going on. And just by talking about it, sometimes we can get rid of those fears too.
Yeah, you know, and like I said before, I've been here over 35 years, and I've actually got to see and the changes within the community from when I started here until now, and how it's changed. And I say we haven't done anything different over the years. You know, we deal with people. I always tell my staff, you deal with people like you like to be dealt with, and treat people like you want to be treated. And I always remember, you know, you have to live in the community, you work here. And you never know, some of these people may be on the jury and you have a case, and you know, if you treated them bad out there, they're probably not going to believe what you're saying. So I mean, you have to be, your ethics have to be high, and understand what you do has a lot of consequences. So
Sean. First, thank you, gentlemen, for coming tonight. And in case you haven't noticed, the topic is probably pretty popular right now. I just want to piggyback on what you just said, Mr. Felton. You said the fear thing, and that's what we're addressing here. Mm-hmm. We've heard there's a tremendous amount of fear, and I think a lot of that is not of our doing. It's politics of fear, and people right away think we need to go to a statutory city and all of these agreements. And I said, well, we need to start a dialogue for sure. So I appreciate you coming in. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm listening for something very specific. ICE involvement would only occur if someone has committed a crime for which they can be jailed. And during the processing, that is when that question is asked.
Mm-hmm.
If that person chooses to not disclose on that question, would you investigate that? Because I'm assuming that's the only time that the ICE intervention would ever occur, is if they acknowledge that they are here illegally.
Yep.
Then you would contact them, and if there is a warrant existing at a federal level, you would hold them for as long as we hold someone for the crime they were being booked for.
Correct.
And is that our full relationship? I mean, I know I talked with Jim about another issue of when they came to serve a federal warrant, our people may help just keep the peace in the area, but
yep.
Is that the only time ICE would be involved in Wilmer or in Candiota County?
Correct. Unless they're coming in and ICE calls up and says, hey, you know, we have information that they're just a half a dozen people that are criminals, they're illegal, we're coming in and we're going to try to find them and get them out of your community. And it may be that we help them just because they don't know the area, and to keep the peace. So,
because we're hearing stories about people that are afraid to go to the grocery store.
Oh.
Because they're afraid to be detained. They're afraid to go to an event. We have a Cinco de Mayo celebration in this community on Saturday. People would say, should I go to this event, or is there going to be a roundup of people? And we need to alleviate those fears. And how we do that, to me, is the way we're doing it here. I don't think we need to add to the politics of fear that is going on around here. So, again, I appreciate you coming out. And just so you understand, that's the level of fear that is out here. For some of our members of our community are absolutely
sure.
Terrified to go about their daily lives, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Sure.
And we have community members who are afraid to call 911 because there's an undocumented that person in the house. They're fearful to do it because will this person be exposed? I mean, of course, we do have undocumented individuals in our community, and they've been here for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a complicated problem that didn't just start overnight. It's been here for a long time. But how do we reassure them that there isn't any heightened, that it's all right to call 911, that there's not going to be repercussions for it?
Right, sure. Well, like I said earlier, we don't have anybody that is trained under the 287 program. you know, to go out and work illegal immigration part of it. We don't have anybody trained that way. My deputies don't do that. They don't go out specifically to look for illegals. If they have contact with them, and like I said, Sean, if it's something to do, they're investigating a crime, then we dig into things deeper. Because I'll be honest, I mean, I've worked some serious crimes that were committed and was committed by an illegal person. I mean, kidnapping, rape, that type of stuff. So, I mean, we don't want those people in our community. And, I mean, we're going to investigate things that so our community is safe.
I want to try and reassure people, too, that those that are victims of crime, that are undocumented in the community, too, that you know, we're sensitive to that. We want them to come forward. We realize that undocumented people probably greatly underreport crimes, too. You know, it's a different analogy, but, you know, if we end up with somebody that's a victim of a crime, but they're they've been drinking underage, we don't give them a ticket for underage drinking, you know, if they're a victim of a crime, too. So, I mean, we certainly, if somebody is in the country undocumented and reports a crime, we don't call ICE with the information that, you know, most of the time, truly, we don't know that. We don't ask it. We have no reason to delve any farther into that. So
I just want to clarify something. First, like, thank you for putting this together, and mm-hmm. thanks to both of you for being here. We really appreciate that you guys, you know, are engaging the community in this dialogue. But I don't think so. I feel like saying ICE involvement, like, just the whole thing is not going deep into how ICE gets involved in different ways. So one of the questions I have for you, Sheriff, is you said that when people get booked, they fill out that sheet and they do have to provide their status. They have to say if they're U.S. citizens.
Correct.
And then if they're not, that information is shared with immigration.
Correct.
Right. So I think that's one way that immigration does get involved, even if people don't have a crime, like a violent crime.
If they're booked into jail, it's a crime.
So what kind of crime would book people into jail? Is it like just general traffic stops, DUIs?
Generally, traffic stops people don't get booked into jail on. They're given a citation. It could be a DWI. You know, the DWI, any type of criminal crime under the 609 code. It could be shoplifting. It could be theft. It could be assaults. Something on that level that is severe enough that they're being booked into the jail and being held for court. So that's where we do the check on them. We have a IBIS machine, it's called, but it's a fingerprint where people put their finger on it, and then that information is put in, you know, into the system, the BCA system, and to see if that person, because we get people that give us wrong names all the time, and so that try to positively identify somebody, that helps us using that fingerprint to see who that person is. And if they're wanted anywhere else on warrants, and what their status is, so.
So then, when people are already, so you contact ICE, right, for any of these crimes, and then ICE can come into the jail, and then they take it from there if they wish to come to within those 48 hours that you give them?
We don't give them 48 hours. Okay. When they go to court, and they could be in jail for a while. I mean, we just had one it was actually a PD case where the person was legal, but they bailed out. So we did, you know, ICE wanted them, but they bailed out. So they're out right now. And so don't know if he's going to come back or not, if he's just going to throw the money out, who knows. But yeah, I mean, if they want to come in and talk to the person, they could come in and talk to them. I mean, we're not going to keep ICE out of the jail. The person can tell them, yes or no, I want to talk to you. You know, that's up to them. We're not going to force them to talk to ICE if ICE wants to come in and talk. But when they're due to get out, we'll give ICE their out date if they're sentenced. And if they're due to get out June 1st, we'll tell ICE, hey, June 1st, so-and-so is getting out of jail. If you want that person, then you'd be at the jail at that time. they have their detainers and they ask for 48 hours. And I mean, this goes back probably 4 or 5 years ago where there's a lot of controversy on that. Like I said earlier, that our warrants are signed by judges. Their warrants are signed by immigration officers. And that's the debate is, okay, if it's going to be a warrant, it should be signed by a federal judge, not an immigration officer. So that's the debate that's gone back and forth. And we've elected, along with a lot of other agencies, to just, if ICE wants them, you be here this day, but we're not going to hold that person for 48 hours until you get here. So
then, if people get booked for the crime they committed, they have a court hearing, they do their time or whatever it is, but then ICE is notified when they're out, then they can get deported for a crime that they already paid for.
They did their time for the crime that they were convicted for here. Whatever the feds have on them for their crime, that's something that they would have to deal with the federal government on. So it's a separate thing from what we dealt with them on.
Right, that's if they have a federal crime. But if they don't have a federal crime, because what happens, the reason I'm asking this, just so it makes more sense, is that people could get booked for any of these crimes that you said, and then they'll pay their time for what they did here, but then ICE will use that to deport them. Because they say, well, we're going after criminals. So then they use whatever crime, you know, they pay for. So it's kind of like making people pay for their crime twice, but with harsher consequences, because people get, you know, literally separated from their families, where other people don't pay their crime twice, and if they were, it would be like jail.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I think the way ICE looks at it and law enforcement overall, the person does have a criminal record now, and they're in the United States illegally. I mean, just for the public safety part of it, that's something I think what law enforcement and the community looks at overall. I mean, do you want somebody like that in your community? I mean, if they're illegal or legal, I don't like them in the community if they're committing crimes and hurting people or, you know, just causing problems.
You make any distinction between misdemeanor and felony?
No. As far as if they're in jail, they're booked, and ICE wants them, then it's up to them if they want to come and get them.
So they want them solely because they are here illegally?
Most of the time, yeah. Yep.
Even though they've been here for 20 or 30 years?
Could be. Yeah. Finally caught up with the person or that type of thing. And there could be some other issues too that we're not aware of on the federal level. So.
Are you required to give ICE that release date?
Well, it's public information.
Sure.
So if you look on our website, it's public information as far as the release date and when they were booked in and that type of thing.
I'm not sure I heard the answer on if someone chooses not to fill out citizen or not on that booking sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Can they do that?
Well, they could refuse to answer us. And at that point, the booking officer could determine if they go into it deeper. Or the officer booking them in.
Depending on the nature of the crime, probably would determine how far.
Right.
Okay, I mean, is there...
And, you know, it depends when the person comes into. I mean, if the person comes intoxicated, drugged, uncooperative, you know, sometimes we don't get any of these answered right away until the next day, until things get ironed out, so.
I'm really grateful for this dialogue. Thank you both, and thanks for the commission. So I just want to understand, Chief Felt, your officers don't ask about immigration status unless investigating a crime. Is that right?
Correct.
So what would happen if an officer asks about immigration status while investigating a crime and someone says they are undocumented? Mm-hmm. What sort of follow-up would happen in that case?
I'm just trying to think of a good example. You know, maybe they're investigating, it's not uncommon, maybe a domestic between, say, a husband and a wife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while they're investigating that, one spouse who's angry at the other will say, in the country illegally, you know, they came on such and such a date, you know, or whatever. That's probably, it's written down, but it's, we don't call ICE from the scene. We don't, what we used to do is we used to jot down that information on kind of like a field contact form, and we had a mailbox for ICE at the office. After 2 years of ICE not checking the mailbox and not caring, we just don't do that anymore. So it probably goes in that report somewhere, you know, that one spouse is reporting it against the other. But generally we would, you know, if that spouse is maybe, if there is an actual assault that takes place and they're brought into the jail or something, then you know, they may potentially delve into it a little bit deeper. But
I guess I'm wondering, mm-hmm. I just want to follow up to that.
Sure.
I guess I'm wondering why, for most crimes, I imagine mm-hmm. immigration status would be irrelevant.
Correct.
Right? So,
yeah.
But I'm just wondering why we allow officers to ask about immigration status when investigating a crime, just in general.
From the police department, generally we don't.
Yeah.
Even on a... You know, sometimes you may end up with someone with multiple forms of identification. It's their picture on four different driver's licenses or ID cards with four different names on them, you know, that type of thing.
Sure.
Then you kind of delve into it, and you know, at face value, that would appear that somebody's being deceptive about maybe where they're coming from, you know. So that's one thing where just the nature of that would probably... You know, the officer may arrest them for a forgery and then potentially ask that.
But
you know,
it's vast majority of cases.
One person asked me at our coffee with the cops one day, what happens if you pull somebody over and they don't have a driver's license with them? And for that, we'll ask for their name. Same for anybody. Name, date of birth. We'll run them through the system. If they come back as not having a Minnesota driver's license, if it comes back not on file, we'll say, do you have a driver's license in another state? No, I don't. Okay. Issue them a ticket for not having a Minnesota driver's license, have somebody else drive the car. Sometimes if you can't identify them through any other means, you know, maybe sometimes they might have a Ridgewater school ID card, you know, that we can maybe use that. It's good enough to this person is who they say they are. But sometimes we'll bring them into the jail, have their picture taken, their fingerprints, and then release them. Generally for not having a Minnesota driver's license, we don't hold anybody on that. So.
Very helpful, thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
We have about 10 minutes left, so we'll take about 5 more minutes of questions, I think. But
thank you. And thanks for the compassion that your policies seem to exhibit overall. But my question is, if I was undocumented and I was the victim of a crime, or maybe I was injured and I needed help, what does the law say I could receive without my undocumented status being a threat?
If you were a victim of a crime or a victim of needing some immediate aid or anything, you would get the same as anybody else. We never take that into account for providing aid to someone or fully investigating a crime in any case there. And there wouldn't be a need for us, and we wouldn't have that. We wouldn't ask someone their immigration status or documented or undocumented status, you know, for being the victim of a crime. I can't think of an example where we would ever need that information, so we wouldn't ask it.
Well, and being mistreated as a migrant worker, for instance.
Mm.
And that person would also be protected under the Human Rights Act, the state of Minnesota. You do not have to be a U.S. citizen to be protected under the Human Rights Act. It's for anyone. Any person can file a complaint under the Human Rights Act.
So what's the difference then between the police force in Wilmer here and then cities that are state universities? Are you doing the same things that those cities are doing? Because it doesn't seem like you're doing ICE's job in this sanctuary cities are doing, right? Or are there any differences?
If my understanding of a sanctuary city is that there's some written agreements in place to kind of to purposely separate, you know, we don't have any written agreements in place. I don't say that. Feel I necessarily agree with having those in place, but we don't walk hand in hand with ICE, and we don't feel the need to, and we don't see it on the horizon where we're going to be expected to either. But.
Yeah, I think that's my understanding of the sanctuary city is that they will have nothing to do with the feds whatsoever on the ICE. That's kind of my understanding. I mean, I haven't delved into it that deep, but the where they just say we won't communicate with you or do anything with you. So.
I think there was one more question.
I'm concerned about the situation where someone's arrested, booked into the jail, and then found innocent. At that point, he's already been identified to ICE. What happens?
ICE would come and, if they still want him, they would come and get him then within that time. But in a case like that, if they're found innocent, they're going to be released out the door, and ICE will never get here in time to get them.
And they wouldn't have a criminal record then, too, if they're found innocent?
Right.
Or, I mean, even if they've been held.
But they would be released. So when they're found guilty in court, they would be released. They'd walk out the door. And.
I think we are going to wrap up the question portion. Just because of time, we do like to end. We will be having more discussion about what we're going to do with this information, so there will be more opportunities. Sean, did you have something else you were going to say?
I was just going to piggyback on what Mr. Stiff was saying, is that if anybody did not receive any assistance because of immigration status, your complaint could be filed right here with this commission, and we would be more than happy to take that and file it for you. That's kind of the job, because then the police force and the sheriff's department know that they violated what they were supposed to do. We're never going to have to do that, is my hope. Likewise, this may not sound nice, but if they were to violate the process they're talking about here, it would be very bad consolation for whoever is arrested, because that person would be deported, but then we would probably file a complaint on behalf of you from this commission as well. But again, they would have not followed their procedure. And so, in either way, it would be the procedure needs to be followed, and then we can continue to operate as we have. It's if we ever violate those things, that's what this commission is, to help facilitate those complaints. And we haven't had to do any of those yet, so hope that stays that way.
Sure.
So if the person was found innocent and then ICE still wanted them, it's because ICE has something at a federal level, a crime there, right?
Yep. Well, they have some reason they want to come and get that person.
I would say no. I work with the community, and if immigration has people's information, even if they don't have a record, we have multiple accounts. The husband does have, for example, a DUI. The police picks him up, and you know, like, they get opened to jail because of that. But then because of the staff, they actually asked for the information of the spouse, and then immigration came for the spouse without the spouse having any criminal record at all.
We've never done that here.
No, I'm saying like in general, I'm talking about how ICE work.
Yeah. And we really wanted this conversation to be about what is happening on our local level. And so that is why we do have our local top officials here to dispel any of the things that may be floating around why people are fearful. So I think we will leave it with that.
But I also want to say, like, it's
can
all
I just,
connected.
Yep, we are going to have more community conversations
right,
in the future.
Right, but I wasn't done
so,
talking.
I know, but we're running out of time. I'm sorry.
I raised my hand, and you didn't let me speak, and then you let two speak, people
oh,
speak, and
I'm
then I
sorry.
Wanted to clarify something.
I apologize.
I'm just really trying to educate people on how it works.
And I would love to invite you to our next meeting. And we will be having more community conversations, and that is the goal of this commission, is to educate and advocate. So
right.
I apologize if I was trying to not answer all the questions. Thank you very, very much, both of you.
Thank you.
For taking time to come and address this and answer all the questions we sent in and a lot of public questions. This obviously, like we said, is a big topic right now. We've spent 3 or 4 meetings on this topic, and I'm sure we'll be having more moving forward. But thank you very much, both of you, for
thank
coming
you.
Here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. We did have some two other business items, but we are kind of out of time for that. We'll have to discuss those next time. Our next meeting date is supposed to be scheduled the week of Wilmerfest. Now, last year we didn't have it. Do we want to have it the week before or the week after? The meeting would be scheduled for June 20th would be the regular date. What does the commission feel? Is that okay, or
does it conflict with anything at Wilmerfest?
I don't know. I just
later in the week, I agree.
Okay.
I think we should just have it during Wilmerfest.
Okay. Okay.
It's only an hour.
June 20th, right here, from 5 to 6, will be our next meeting. Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll move.
Okay. Richard?
I'll second.
Crystal seconds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned.